Ease away the problems and the pain. That's Blink 182. I'm Blake Murphy, and this is Jay's Talk Plus. A little Dysentery Gary humor for you. A morning after the Flu Jays played their version of the flu game, beating the league-leading Orioles 3-2 in extra innings. We will go to a quote from John Schneider momentarily about just how big that win was for the team. They were down three position players due to illness, another in Danny Jansen due to back spasms. So they had no subs available, no pinch hitter, no pinch runner, no defensive replacement. They didn't know until the morning if Jose Berríos would be able to pitch in this game. His fever eventually broke. Chris Bassitt was ready to go instead of starting today. If Berríos couldn't, that is a lot of adversity for a team that is trying to dig their way up here in the early going, and they got it done. They managed to eke out this 3-2 win. Great Jose Berríos performance, big Dalton Varsho game, very good Jordan Romano, two innings out of the bullpen. This was and remains the number one team in the American League that the Blue Jays beat, and it was Corbin Burnes, of all people, who they were able to get this victory off of. There's a reason that John Schneider described it like this.
Yeah, you don't want to say May 13th is a huge game, but this was a huge win. We had nine guys, and we obviously had no moves to make. So I couldn't be prouder of, I don't know if that's a word, I couldn't be more proud of the guys that were out there tonight. Huge day from Bo, huge day from Varsh. I mean, Varsh hits a homer, robs a homer, drives in the winning run. Told him before the game, there's no secrets here, boys. You're not getting pinch hit for, you're not getting pinch run for. So Vogie, Kirky, I hope you're feeling fast. But yeah, it's May 13th, but that's a huge win.
John Schneider also very under the weather. As that interview post-game went on, his voice got raspier and raspier. Let's hope our next guest didn't catch any of this from being around the team yesterday and the rest of the series. We're joined now from the Paris of America, Baltimore, Maryland. It's Keegan Matheson of MLB.com, of BlueJays.com, with just some killer lighting here. How we doing, buddy?
I'm doing well. Baltimore looks good on me. You know, maybe I'm not a natural fit in those fancy places like New York, but Baltimore, this is my people, baby. How we doing?
Good, man. Better after that win yesterday, certainly. Look, I don't want to go too inside the life of a sports writer on the road and things like that, but in addition to all these Blue Jays absences, we almost had no Keegan Matheson at the game yesterday. You take us through a little bit of your travel day from hell yesterday?
Rough day, guys. And I know that everyone out there has sympathy for someone who has to travel and write baseball. So let me take you through it. Blew a tire on the Gardner in the morning. And we're not talking like an air leaking tire. We're talking a bomb went off in my car, blew a tire. So scraped up that, banged up myself a little bit getting off the road. But it took a tow truck, a cop car, an Uber, a couple planes. I took a scooter from the hotel to the ballpark. Got there in about the fifth inning. It was an interesting day. I think a lot of folks still think that we travel with the team. That stopped about 20 years ago. For the best, they don't want to see me on their airplane, and that's great. But it was an interesting day. Thankfully, got here. But some days, it's not the most glamorous part of the job. Believe it or not, though, Blake, I kind of kept my temper and emotions in check. I feel like the minor inconveniences get me, but I think I decided early on not to go off the rails. It was the surprise of the season, and I finally got here. I couldn't leave Shai Davidi alone in Baltimore. It can be a dangerous spot. I had to come take care of things.
And you have to think that the Blue Jays looked out and they saw you playing through that, the composure you kept together, and they drew from that in their own win. So in seriousness, look, we see the jokes on Twitter about and get a little bit of updates throughout the broadcast. You use the term Flu Jays in your lead on your piece. How bad a shape is this Blue Jays team in right now, though, when it comes to this illness that's going around for the second time this year?
Legitimately really bad. Now, this tends to happen every year. I don't know why the Blue Jays get sick more than other teams. Maybe we just hear about it more. This seems a lot worse than the first one this year. These guys are really, really sick. This is for real. And I didn't get much of a feel for that pregame, of course, because I was still on an airplane. And when we were interviewing Jose Berríos after the game, it was Shai, Hazel, myself, and some local Baltimore media. Jose started talking about how he had a fever up until the morning, wasn't sure if he could pitch. And as Jose said that, we all kind of took a step back and realized we were a little close to him. So hopefully we don't catch that. I think I drink a little more bourbon than Shai and Hazel, so I might be more out of the woods there. I might be a little more sanitized. We'll see. But these guys are sick, for real sick. We've seen a few of them walking around, hoods up, heads down. There's not a lot of energy there. So when you factor that into the fact that the last couple of weeks haven't gone all that good, this was, like Schneider said, a big win. It was really, really big.
Now, look, there are two games left in this series. This is a very good Baltimore team. That win will probably be like Saturday's was. We kind of thought Saturday's would be a big turnaround, right? They finally come back. They finally put up a double-digit spot in a game, cross that 20 base runner threshold that almost everyone in baseball had done already. And then the next day they put up one run. Now, yesterday was a different style of feel good win. And maybe you can, you know, get another foot in front of that foot and get going here a little bit. But if they come out and lose today and tomorrow, and they've dropped six series in a row and they're five games under 500 for the first time since 2019, none of that will really matter. Some of this might come down to just how much better or worse guys are feeling today, but how imperative do you think it is for them to, now that they're up 1-0 in this series against Baltimore, they got to have this series at this point.
They have to. One win doesn't matter. This isn't the NFL where you can have a turnaround win. And I know we're very eager to find a turning point, find one magical day where it all, that doesn't happen. It doesn't happen. It even reminds me of Alec Manoa's start in his last outing. Fantastic. Looked great. Really encouraging. You need to do it five times. Stuff doesn't turn around in one day in Major League Baseball. It's, you know, divide one by 162. I'm not a math man, but it's not a big percentage. So you need to do it a few times. The Blue Jays, if they can come out of this six-game stretch, O's and Rays, at 4-2, fantastic. Then you go into the White Sox. They're not very good at baseball. The Tigers and the White Sox again. That's when you can start to turn a season around, because then, Blake, we're talking about 2 weeks, not just one game. It's never going to be one game, but the Blue Jays need to keep some of this going. That's what they haven't done all year, micro and macro, whether it's kind of getting to a starting pitcher or winning a series. They have moments, but they haven't strung anything together consistently. And that points me towards, are they losing the adjustments game from game to game, from at bat to at bat? Probably. But they need to keep this going. Winning a series, one of these next two against the Orioles, that's a great start. So one game's good. It's very nice. If you're an Orioles fan, you're probably looking at the Blue Jays today saying, okay, calm down. It's one game. But it's a start. It's a fine start.
Yeah, one game at a time gets you to, what are the Marlins, 11-32? I think they've only won more than one game in a row once this season. That's what one game at a time gets you. And then you're selling off pieces to the Padres nice and early here. Shout out to Otto Lopez, though. Hit his third homer of the season for Miami yesterday.
There we go.
Everyday guy now in the post-Luis Arise era. You mentioned the adjustments there, Keegan, and this kind of gets to the larger weight that the poor start to the season has had. And we've heard John Schneider's tone change. I think you were on with me last Monday, and that was after John Schneider had gone from the patience, patience, patience to the time is now, John Cena theme music, like, we got to go, we got to get this. We've also, at least from outside, it has, lineup decisions are one thing, and we've seen them, when guys are available, ride the hot hand a little bit more, who's hitting well right now. We've also, in some of the conversations, some of what Hazel's picking up on the broadcast, some of what John Schneider's saying pre and post game, it sounded like a bit of a tone shift. Bo actually had some quotes to Shai Davidi in a piece at sportsnet.ca yesterday as well, that maybe seem like, hey, the strategies of 162 that you know will even out over 600 plate appearances or whatever, those are maybe giving way right now to, we gotta hit a little bit. We gotta be a little bit more aggressive. Maybe having league best swing decisions has to give way to being a little bit more aggressive, making a Corbin Burns uncomfortable to get him out of there in five or six, that kind of thing. Are you sensing that as well, that there is a bit, not a huge fundamental like philosophical shift, but a strategic change here a little bit as each individual win feels a little bigger right now?
Yeah, there has to be. And that's typically something you associate with August, September, maybe down the stretch into the playoffs. But the Blue Jays trying to play their identity of baseball wasn't working, obviously, through April. And you need to be flexible in that sense. You look across any sport, as we're getting down, look through the NBA playoffs, look at the NFL when different styles of teams are going up against each other. If there's a team that can only play one way, they lose. They're toast. You need to be able to adapt a little bit. You don't need to be a chameleon completely, but you need to be able to adapt to the situation, because every starter you're going to face is not the same dude. Every lineup you face is not going to be the same collection of nine hitters. The Blue Jays need to be a bit more flexible, and that gets back to just playing natural baseball. I know that strategies and these processes and whatever other buzzword you want to throw at it matters. It does. We can't dismiss that. But within that, there needs to be a little bit of feel. a little bit of feel for what's happening and what you can change. It's all about the adjustment game for these guys. I'll go back to that Manoa example, Blake. When you look at an encouraging start like that, let's use him as kind of a small example of a big picture. Great start. Fantastic start. Well, next time the Rays are going to be looking for that changeup. They're going to know he's in the zone. They're going to be swinging at the first and second pitch. How does he adjust back to that? Now, zoom out a bit, and how do the Blue Jays make those adjustments? They've clearly just been losing that adjustment game a little bit through games, through series. You need to be a bit more flexible, and that is not hard for baseball players. It's what they've done their whole career. They just need to be a bit more natural, a bit more flexible, and we saw a bit of that yesterday.
Somewhat ironically, the Blue Jays do, the games they do win all seem to feel kind of playoff-y since they don't blow teams out. It's a lot of 3-2, 3-1 kind of thing, but you got to get there, and that's going to require you to change things up. Bailey Ober on Sunday, a good example, a nice pitcher, and he's got that kind of invisible that rises up on guys, but that you can't adjust from a Joe Ryan and a Simeon Woods Richardson to a Bailey Ober over the course of a series was a little tough. And we'll see it today. Kyle Bradish, a much different guy than Corbin Burns, a lefty, and Cole Irvin tomorrow if we get that game in. How is the weather looking at your window? It's supposed to be, the forecast is like light rain through the playing hours tonight. We looking okay?
It's looking, let me give you a live weather report here. I see some very uninspiring buildings and a bit of a white gray sky. I consider it more on the white side of gray here. It's still pretty light.
Okay.
But right now today, given how tomorrow looks, I think that today there has to be some motivation to play. Tomorrow looks really bad.
Yeah.
Now, I believe there's a couple mutual off days coming up.
Including Thursday.
I am motivated. Yeah. As a man motivated to leave the city of Baltimore, if I may interject my selfishness there, I'm not looking to stick around. We'll see. But I think today they'll make any effort to play whatsoever. As long as it stays pretty light, they take good care of this field here. Hopefully we won't have another Kansas City situation. Last time it was our friend Ben Nicholson-Smith stuck with me in the press box for 4 hours. Pray for Shy. If this happens this time, he'll be stuck with me. But it's looking okay today. And I think just given the context of tomorrow, they got to try today because tomorrow looks like a bit of a washout. So hopefully I cover two baseball games in the next, 28 hours. But it's not looking great.
Yeah, there is the mutual off day Thursday if they can't get it in Wednesday. The Jays are also back there the last week of July, 29, 30, 31. And there's a 12:30 game on the Wednesday. Maybe you could get two in. But obviously, yeah, they would prefer to get these ones in. So last night's game, Jose Berríos, you mentioned, he didn't know if he was going to pitch. The fever breaks at 10 a.m. He's loaded up on electrolytes and things like that throughout the day just to be able to go out there. Adley Rutschman gets him twice. But otherwise, this is a pure pitch-to-weak contact outing from Jose Berríos. Only four swing and miss the whole game. He was just like, and I don't know, maybe you guys asked him about this, but it really did seem like, I feel awful. Let's get out of these innings as quickly as possible. He was just trusting the stuff to generate weak contact, not unlike Alek Manoa on Sunday. What did you make of Berríos being able to get that done without the bat-missing stuff that he sometimes has?
Perfect example of a guy who did adjust and who was a bit flexible. And Jose said along with his fever, he had pain all over his body, a lot of body pain. And he was worried that when he was in pain, if he was pitching and maxing out, he might strain something. And Jose, I've said this a lot, it doesn't really come through over the television. He's in ridiculous shape. Like he might be in the best shape of anyone on that roster. He is so built. And he leaned on his body yesterday. He didn't have his health whatsoever. But when you're in that good of shape, you can physically make those adjustments and pitch a bit differently. And that's so impressive. Like every year that passes in Major League Baseball, Blake, a guy that can do that gets more impressive to me. There's a ton of guys who can whip 99 and a big slider at you, but if they need to adjust, they are toast. A guy like Berríos is getting more and more rare. He has looked just fantastic this season. His stuff is all right there. He hasn't changed anything drastically. He's not throwing lefty. He's not throwing 102. But he's pitching with a bit of an edge, which I love. Because Jose is the ultimate nice guy. He is one of the best fellows you will meet in this game. But there's a bit of an edge this year. Coming off how last year ended, I like that. You're seeing that in Jose's game. And even post-game yesterday, he did not have that smile, that spark you normally see. He was down bad. I've seen that look in the mirror before. It's not fun, but man, he made it work. That's as impressive as he pitched all year, given those circumstances.
And yeah, fascinating guy, very nice guy. Also, I should mention he announced last week that his new charitable initiative, El Dream, in support of Jays Care Foundation, which will work hand in hand with the work he does back in Puerto Rico with grassroots baseball, working with a couple of different groups that Jays Care Foundation works with as well. And that includes $500 donated for every strikeout he records during the season. So didn't get a lot of those yesterday. Maybe we need to tweak it a little bit. If you get, 80 mile an hour off the bat, ground outs and infield flies, we could do that as well.
He's also the analytics nerds are coming for charities now. Yeah. Oh my God.
It's unbelievable. Oh my God. He's also auctioning off some signed gold baseballs. You can find out more details about that at bluejays.auctions.mlb.com. So great stuff from Jose Barrios there. Great stuff from him last night. And he got really good bullpen work behind him. Now, that hasn't been the norm. The Jays entered this series dead last in bullpen ERA. They're up to 28th now. Some really good stuff last night. We see Jimmy Garcia picking up where he left off, striking out the side in the eighth inning. And then we get to Jordan Romano, who, I don't know, I'd seen a little concern from Blue Jays fans both at games and on Twitter about Romano's start. He obviously got a late start to the season due to injury. He looked nasty on the weekend, and he gave them two innings last night where, first of all, he is now in extra innings, only allowed the ghost runner on second to score once in the last 10 extra innings that he's pitched in. So that's real good. He's looking good there, but nasty stuff again from him last night. Where are you on Jordan Romano? What was the blip there? Just a case of him starting late?
Normally, Romano puts the runner on second himself and then buckles down. This just skips a step, I think, for him. Jordan likes to make it interesting. He has a flair for the dramatic. And when those runners are getting on first, second, third, that's when he really picks it up a notch. He looked fantastic last night. After he got that final out, that's as fired up as I've seen him in a long time. And he needs that. Jordan's a guy who certainly pitches with a lot of emotion. And I think an outing like this can do a lot for him. Now, coming from that late start is difficult for a closer because you're trying to simulate the adrenaline. You're trying to get back into your mechanics. Now, the Blue Jays bullpen as a whole, still not great. But if you look at Jimmy Garcia, who I think is an all-star, if anything holds him back from that, it's just going to be the save total. He's an all-star right now. But him and Romano on that back end is fantastic. A lot of teams would take that right now. So having someone like Jose Barrios get through a deep start like that, that's why it's so important. You cut out the middle, that sixth and seventh inning. Cutting that out is where the problems happen. So now the Blue Jays can allow guys like Swanson to get back into his groove, Chad Green to come back and play a big role. But Romano, just fantastic. And in that ninth inning, 10th inning, sorry, John Schneider said that's what makes a closer. Being able to take that guy on second and take care of him. That's when Romano is at his best. Even though he makes it interesting sometimes, that's when he is at his very best.
Yeah, you mentioned his flair for the dramatic. These numbers are from last year, not this year yet. But he allowed a progressively lower OPS the tougher the situation got last year. So he gave up a 691 OPS with the bases empty. That dropped to 610 with men on base, and then it dropped to 556 with runners in scoring position. So the tougher the situation, the better Jordan Romano gets, apparently.
That is sick behavior.
Yeah, he had an interesting interview with Caleb Joseph on the weekend that aired on a broadcast as well. That was basically him saying that, like, without using those numbers, like, yeah, the more fired up I can get, the better I'm going to pitch. With respect to that bullpen, obviously Jordan Romano is the ninth inning guy. Jimmy Garcia is the next high leverage guy. Given what we've seen from Eric Swanson, hasn't been able to find that groove. Tim Mesa from the left side has still been struggling as well. Zach Pops had a nice go here, but in low leverage and in a small sample. Would Trevor Richards probably be the next guy up for you after Romano and Garcia at this point?
He might be right now. Trevor Richards is that guy that's always just kind of right there. And when everyone else falls below him, that buoys him right now. Trevor Richards is steady. There's nothing flashy about it. The changeup is obviously brilliant, but he's not overwhelming hitters, but he's steady enough. And while they wait for Chad Green to come back, Bowden Francis to come back, who I think can still be a really underrated part of this bullpen, I think he's important. You need someone like Trevor Richards to step up. You need to fill that gap. And frankly, the Blue Jays desperately need to give this bullpen a 7-1 lead eventually. Let Eric Swanson come in and pitch a clean sixth inning with a big lead. because right now the Blue Jays are trying to keep him rolling. You want to keep encouraging an Eric Swanson to get out there and pitch well. But when all of the games are one run, it's tough. You need a lopsided score, ideally in your direction, to get someone like Swanson out there. Because when Swanson's at his best, he builds out that group so importantly. He can be such a key piece to this group. But like you mentioned, with Tim Meza, Yenesis Cabrera is always a toss-up what you're going to get from him from the left side. The Blue Jays just need some more steady arms right now. It doesn't need to be the best bullpen tomorrow. Just catch your breath. Get back above water for a little bit here. And Green coming back will be a big part of that, too.
Yeah, Green, no imminent update on what his rehab timeline is like. Him and Yariel Rodriguez have been throwing back in Toronto. Bowden Francis, though, is going to start at AAA today, throw two innings, 40 to 45 pitches per John Schneider yesterday pregame. So they'll get their long man back before too long here, at least, which should help. So on the other side of things, Jose Berríos did allow the two Adley Rutschman home runs, and he got a little bit of an assist from Dalton Varsho. There was a Ryan O'Hearn home run that Ryan O'Hearn, by the way, who is right there with Ryan Mountcastle as like bonkers numbers against the Blue Jays, and just like weirdly, like maybe the most effective pinch hitter slash platoon DH guy going right now, if you look at the last season and change. But Dalton Varsho robs one for the Blue Jays and then hits one himself. So a plus two home run game. Varsho had cooled off a little bit there. What have you made of where he is? Obviously, the defense is the defense, but that, even by Varsho's standards, that is a pretty tremendous catch last night.
That was incredible. And Varsho is still playing very confidently, which matters. With some hitters, it doesn't matter much. I don't think this is an across-the-board blanket thing. You see it with Vladdy, how much it matters to Vladdy. You see it with different pitchers. You say Kikuchi's an example of a guy who confidence matters to. I would put Varsho into that group right now, because Varsho is a guy who tinkers and tinkers and tinkers and tinkers. At a certain point, that can be detrimental to a hitter. There were a lot of times last year, Blake, and I know we've talked about this in the past, where you'd ask Varsho about his swing and he'd start singing that song of the knee bones connected to the what bone, and this is moving here. And it was just a lot happening at once. Right now, I think he's trusting his talent, which is really important. Bo Bichette talks about that a lot, just remembering how good you are, remembering that you're really, really talented. Now, Dalton Varsho on the bases, in the field, brilliant. He's always going to have that. But this offensive game is what can put him over the top into a very good MLB player, like a really good guy who changes games. And his power to the right side as well. Hitting the ball in the air to the pull side, what a concept. More people should try it. Varsho, when he's at his best, that's what he's doing. And turning on a ball like that against a real good pitcher, not a great pitch, but a fine pitcher, that can get him back on this course with confidence. I'm not hearing him talk about tinkering as much this year. That's the best way to put it. And when Varsho's natural, he's such a good athlete, and you're seeing that come out.
And look, they need it. He's got seven home runs now. Nobody else on the team has more than four. They rank 27th in Major League Baseball in home runs. I tweeted a stat out yesterday that they're among three teams with the Marlins and the White Sox, two teams you don't want to be in any sort of group with, as teams that have more double plays grounded into than home runs hit. So it's been bleak. Yeah, and they're third in home runs allowed. So this is they could use all the power they can get. I'll use that as a pivot here, Keegan, not to make a negative of a positive, but Vlad has found it a little bit, right? He's gotten back there at least as a contact hitter. Joe Siddle had a fantastic breakdown on Blue Jay Central last night. He tweeted it out, the video of it this morning as well, going into some of the swing changes, the hand placement, the barrel level with Vlad, and how he's got back to being able to reach balls and hit for contact. Top five in the American League in batting average and on base percentage over the last 25 games, leads the league in balls hit 110 miles an hour or harder, of course. But Keegan, he's got a 404 slugging over that 25 game stretch, still sitting on four home runs. I don't want to make a negative of a positive, but how badly did the Jays need Vladimir Guerrero Jr. to turn this sustained hitting for average streak into some more pop over the next little bit as kind of a next step here?
Now, I think this is really important, Blake, and it's like you. I look at this, and you want to acknowledge what's good here. It's working, obviously. But when Vladdy's changing games, it's home runs. And a lot of these are rocket singles. And I have spent half of my life talking about Vladdy's exit velocities. They look great right now. Really good. A lot of the supporting data looks great right now. But getting a bit more loft underneath those, a lot of these are line drives. If he can just turn a bit more loft a bit more backspin on the ball, get it airborne. A lot of these are going to go out when you're hitting it that hard. And that's what can steal a couple of games along the way. You don't want him to get out of this approach, but along these next 20 or 30 games, if Vladdy can clip another two or three home runs than he is right now, that's going to steal you a win. That turns 30 and 30 into 32 and 29, something like that. You can change quickly with power. The Blue Jays don't hit for enough power, period. They should hit for more. They should have hit for more last year. The way this team talks about power confuses me at times. Hit for power. You'll win more games. But Vladdy is at the center of that, of course, and he's looked fantastic. And this gets back to almost his prospect years, Blake. I remember at that time there was a lot of conversation of, is this guy going to be more of a 50-homer max power guy? Or is it going to be more of a Joey Votto route where he's a really high on base, hitting the ball hard, but maybe not always out of the ballpark? It's an interesting stylistic determination for Vladdy right now. It's working. You don't want him to get out of it. But at this point, the Blue Jays need to be greedy. You want to see a little bit more power, because there's too many games like last night's. You need a home run to change it. A lot of these tight games are going to change into wins when you hit home runs. They're not doing that much.
Yeah, and Vlad, you know, we got all this new StatCast bat speed data and stuff like that yesterday. He remains a fascinating guy where, yeah, he hits the heck out of the ball. And I've referenced damage rate, which is a proprietary baseball prospectus stat. And, you know, it's been on a steady decline despite the high contact ability and hard exit velocities. And one of the things that these new StatCast metrics reveal is, well, Vlad doesn't square the ball up at a level that he maybe should. He's got the bat speed, he's got the long swing, he's got the exit velocities, but the square up rate, as MLB is measuring that, is really low for a hitter of his quality. So maybe he just a little off there on the angle he's getting at the ball, where he's hitting it on the bat. Be a fascinating thing to track as he, you know, again, is hot now. Now, can you turn that hot average streak into some extra power as well? Keegan, before we let you go, there is no pre-order link yet, so at the risk of promoting something before people can do anything about it, you are working on a book, The Franchise, Toronto Blue Jays, a collection of stories and essays that'll be out in 2025. I know you are working on that when you get an odd series off from the Blue Jays beat. How's it coming along? How are we feeling about it?
It's coming along finally. We're getting to the point where I actually have to write this thing, which is exciting and not as fun as the past few months, but I'm excited to get into this. It's going to be telling the history of the team, but a little selective. You know, I don't think we need all of the X's and O's again. I've written 2,000 stories about all of those, but a lot of stories about what it meant to the people who were there, what it meant to the city of Toronto, how this team was built, and the stories around it. So there's going to be stories on the franchise players, the faces of this team, some of the great teams over the years, but also on the media side, some of the storytellers who have brought you these games and some things that are unique to the Blue Jays. So that's my morning project now. I just took a week of vacation. It was a book week, but it's coming along now. We're getting to the fun parts. The real fun part will be when I hit send on an email in a few months, but slowly but surely. I'm a man who is used to writing his stories every day, and it appears immediately. So I'm learning patience, Blake. At age 33, I'm developing patience for the first time.
Yeah, well, don't develop too much of it, because then you get a little too passive, and then we're going to be talking about, well, do you need to break from your strategy here, Keegan, to get this book done, to have enough power in the book? You don't want to parallel the Blue Jays too much. Thanks for taking the time.
High power book.
Yeah, I hope so, man. All slug. Thanks for taking the time out this morning, buddy. Enjoy Baltimore.
You got it, Blake. We'll see you.
Keegan Matheson of MLB.com, of BlueJays.com. Again, the book will be The Franchise, Toronto Blue Jays, a collection of stories and essays. That'll be out in 2025, but imagine we'll get a pre-order link later this season, but want to plug that wherever we can because we're such big fans of Keegan and his work over at MLB.com, over at BlueJays.com. Also a big fan of the Baltimore Orioles broadcast. We've got some old friends over there on the radio side. Also Kevin Brown on the television side. One of my favorite play-by-play guys in all of Major League Baseball. A ton of music references worked in. He's the guy, if you remember the clip of a broadcaster commentating in the Tom DeLonge voice from Blink-182. That's Kevin. He's going to join us next. We'll take a closer look at the Orioles side of this series as Jays Talk Plus continues on the Sportsnet Radio Network and Sportsnet 360.
Hey, it's Ailish Forafar.
And I'm Justin Cuthbert.
Join us as we discuss the most important sports stories of the day and tee up the biggest games of the night.
It's The Fan Pregame, 6 p.m. weekdays on Sportsnet, Sportsnet 590 The Fan, and wherever you get your podcasts.
3-2 against the Baltimore Orioles. Great stuff from Jose Berrios, Jimmy Garcia, and Jordan Romano on the pitching side. Big moments for Daniel Vogelbach on the hitting side. Really needed a hit. He had an RBI loop single in a sixth inning rally that scored one. That ended an 0-for-10 stretch for him. He is hitting .118 on the season still, and has an OPS plus of 35 rather. So not the greatest of starts for Daniel Vogelbach. I was going to say for his Blue Jays career, but it's not the start of his Blue Jays career. He spent a minute here in 2020 as well. Eventually got claimed off of waivers and had a good season and change for the Milwaukee Brewers. The Jays, in case you forget, had Travis Shaw. Totally slipped my mind when they were making that decision between Vogelbach and Shaw. Dalton Varsho also takes a cookie of a changeup for a solo home run. We talked about that in the last segment with Keegan Mathison. And then it was Dalton Varsho coming up with the RBI ground out in the 10th inning. The second terrific play of the game for Jorge Mateo at second base, but it was enough to get that run across. We're going to talk to Kevin Brown from the Orioles side momentarily here. In the interim, we can take a look at tonight's matchup. It's Chris Bassitt against Kyle Bradish. A bit different than Corbin Burns, because nobody is really like Corbin Burns. Nobody just gasses you with a cutter that often and then mixes in two nasty breaking balls, a ridiculous changeup to lefties, etc. Kyle Bradish, though, is off to a very good start here. He's only made two starts. He got a delay to his season because of injury, but he allowed 1 over 4 2/3 and then allowed 1 over 5. He is striking out more batters than we're used to seeing from Kyle Bradish. And it's a small sample here, but he's using that sinker a lot more, especially against right-handers. That's something we've seen Jose Berrios do as well. Jose Berrios, traditionally kind of a four-pitch, mix-them-all-in guy. Against righties, he's moved more and more to a sinker-slurve combination that makes up about 85% of his pitch mix to righties. We're seeing that with Kyle Bradish as well, though in his case, it's a sinker slider. That makes up about 90% of what he'll throw to righties. Lefties will get a mix of a little bit of everything. It's interesting that he's throwing more of the sinker too, because he had, by some of the underlying Statcast metrics, some of the best breaking stuff in baseball last year. I know that's a little weird to hear with Kyle Bradish, who we don't think of necessarily as a front of the rotation kind of arm for this Orioles team, but he did have a good slider and a good curveball last year on his way to that 2.83 ERA. And yeah, some of the underlying stuff said, okay, Kyle Bradish isn't going to maintain a 2.83 ERA. He strikes out a good number of guys, but not an elite level. He doesn't walk very many guys. He has a good ground ball rate. There's a good mix here of skills, even if Kyle Bradish doesn't have at the very top wipeout stuff. We'll see which Blue Jays are even available to hit against him tonight. I think, we can nitpick lineups and we can make lineup decisions and things like that. But if the Jays don't have enough bodies, then that'll do it for them. Last night they only had 9 available to go, so we'll see. We'll see how that goes. On the Chris Bassitt side, Bassitt is at least feeling fine. At least last we heard, he was going to be ready to go yesterday if Jose Berrios wasn't able to go. Let's take a closer look at the Orioles side of things. We're joined now by Orioles and ESPN play-by-play broadcaster Kevin Brown. Kevin, you're all over the place lately, man. You got ESPN softball, all these extra inning Orioles games, rain delays like every day or two. Are you exhausted right now? How we doing?
I feel weirdly good. I don't know. I feel weirdly good, and the moment the game ends, my body just collapses into a shell.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. That's the way it goes when you're grinding it down like that. I guess we could be headed for another rain delay tomorrow. It looks like. What do you do with the rain delay time? You've had a bunch of them lately, so I feel like it's a fair question to ask.
Don't say that. Don't say that. Well, I was just in Auburn, Alabama. My other job, as you said, is for ESPN. I work in college softball there. We had a day where we got to the park at 8 a.m. for a 10 a.m. game. The SEC softball tournament features a full hair and makeup team. Not that I need much, with my all natural, stunning good looks. But we had to get there at 8 a.m. to get in the makeup chair. So we were there hanging out till about 10. I was doing some last minute prep. Then at around 10:15, we found out they wouldn't play till 1:30. So I'm back to the hotel, took a nap, decided to head back to the park for 12:30, was literally 1 minute away from arriving when I found out the game had been further postponed till 5. So then I drove through Chick-fil-A, and I went back to the hotel, did some more work, because at that point I had found out it was supposed to be a 4-game day. It was going to be a 2-game day, and we were only going to do one, and then we were going to do 2 games tomorrow that would start the day that the other crew was supposed to do, so I had to prep for those. I just tried not to lose my mind. For baseball rain delays, I pretty much just wander around and talk to everybody in the press box and probably annoy them to the point of no end and then shove my face with as much popcorn as possible.
Yeah, it's good. I mean, we would never get one here.
Don't put the bad rain juju in the universe, Blake. We're going to play these games on time. It's going to happen.
I hope you're right.
One of these days, I'm going to have a day where there's no rain and we play 9 innings. It hasn't happened since last Tuesday, but it's going to happen.
Oh, man. I hope you're right. Although last night's extra inning game was a lot of fun. At least if I were there, we could just nerd out over music stuff for a little bit to kill some of the time, do some press box karaoke or something like that. So last night's game did go 10 innings, but it started on time. It was a really, really good one. And we got a pair of homers from Adley Rutschman. Other than that Ryan O'Hearn shot that Dalton Varsho pulled back, Adley was about the only guy who had anything on any of these Blue Jays pitchers. He's had a fascinating start to the season, hitting for a little bit more pop, a little bit more slugging. We haven't seen him take quite the walks that he's taken in the past, maybe a little bit more aggressive at the plate. What have you seen in this next evolution of Adley Rutschman as pitchers start to adjust to him, and now he's making this, you know, kind of third-year counter adjustment?
It is fascinating indeed. Because last year, this is a guy who had 20 home runs and walked 92 times. And I thought, and a lot of people did, he probably can hit more than 20 home runs. Now he has 8 home runs, and he's only walked 8 times. So his on-base percentage is about 30 points lower. His slugging is about 50 points higher. He's chasing much more. And he still swings at first pitch strikes less frequently than anybody in baseball, but I think pitchers now are smart enough to realize, hey, this guy historically does not swing at the first pitch. I'm just going to throw a fastball on the first pitch right down the middle. And so I'm starting to see him be a little more aggressive, starting to see him make that counter adjustment. I think it's an interesting philosophy for him because obviously he's moved the levers dramatically in one direction. If he can move the levers a little bit back and drop the chase rate a little, be a little more patient while maintaining this power, I mean, then you have the makings of a legitimate MVP candidate. But on the whole, his offensive production is actually better than it was last year, walking less but hitting for power more. I'm encouraged of late, like, because his first 5 home runs of the year, 4 were right-handed, and his last 3 have been left-handed, including the 2 last night. You know, his first year, he really excelled from the left hand of the plate. Had only 1 home run right-handed, really struggled. Historically speaking, college minor leagues, he's been just as good, if not better, right-handed. And so this year, it's been a pretty dramatic shift. But now that the left-handed swing is starting to come into play, I think the last piece of the puzzle is just dropping the chase rate down a little more. And, you know, maybe pitchers will realize he's being more aggressive and they can pitch more out of the zone. And then he counters back. He's the kind of guy that is fun to watch maneuver and counter maneuver because of how intelligent he is as a hitter. And it's been fascinating to see him change his approach, maybe to surprise some folks for the better this year with a little bit increased power and a little more swing.
Yeah, and it's going to be a really interesting battle between him and Chris Bassitt tonight. Bassitt, who is one of the, you know, most brain-first pitchers that we have, throws 8 different pitches. Last outing, he threw all 8 of them in 1 outing, a handful of times each. And yeah, he's certainly going to know. Adley Rutschman only swings at the first pitch 9% of the time. But does Rutschman go in with that knowledge too and say, hey, you know what, I'm looking for one early here. I'm going to jump on one. So Adley was the only guy who got something going yesterday. The answer to this is surely just randomness, but why can't this team, well, like why are the Orioles a good offensive team except when Corbin Burnes starts?
Randomness.
It feels personal, you know?
Last night, Barrios was terrific.
Yeah.
The start before that, Trevor Williams was terrific with the Nats. And the start before that, Luis Gil with the Yankees. I don't know if you all have seen Luis Gil this year. Some of the filthiest, hardest stuff that the Orioles have seen all season. And it's not like these guys are all number ones, but they've all pitched like number ones. So I think it is just total randomness and oddity. Look, the Orioles got Corbin Burns 11 runs opening day. So
fair.
Weird stuff happens is the best answer I have. I think they won his first six starts of the year, and now they've lost his last three. And over the last three, he's allowed 2, 3, and 1 runs, respectively. So go figure.
Yeah, go figure. We dealt with this with Kevin Gausman 2 seasons back as well. He was, you know, a Cy Young candidate who barely won any games because the way things break. Look, someone who has really good numbers early on so far here is going to start tonight for the Orioles. It's Kyle Bradish. I know it's just been 2 starts back from the IL, but they've been pretty good starts, and we're seeing a little bit more swing and miss stuff than we saw last year from Kyle Bradish. What have you made of his first 2 outings this year?
I think he looks great. I think similar to what Berríos did last night, he's using his two-seamer a lot more. I'm kind of fascinated by the development of the two-seamer. I think we're in a place in baseball where, for a lot of pitchers, the two-seamer is coming back in vogue as hitters have adjusted to the launch angle swing of the four-seamer at the top of the zone. Bradish added it 2 years ago. Dean Kramer did as well. It's really helped fill them out as pitchers. And it has great late bite. It has great movement. He's starting to use it a little bit. The first 2 starts is kind of a front hip pitch to lefties, which can be so effective when you run it back over. His breaking balls were his strength last year, and they're both really good again. But look, we didn't know if Kyle Bradish was going to pitch this year. He had a UCL sprain in the offseason, which, as I understand it, is a very small tear. But not a full tear that requires Tommy John. But you hear UCL and everybody braces for the worst. And when we heard UCL in spring training in February, nobody knew if we'd see Kyle Bradish this year. So I think it's understandable to be crossing all appendages on every pitch he throws. But pitchers have thrown through sprains. And, you know, Masahiro Tanaka had one with the Yankees and then threw for 7 years without needing surgery. Some guys do make it through this. Bradish has made it through, and he looks like Kyle Bradish of last year. You mentioned a little more swing and miss stuff. Everything looks sharp. The movement profile is really good. And, you know, I'm encouraged by him throwing a few more two-seamers, because at some point the league goes, you're a breaking ball guy. We're gonna focus on your breaking ball, sit on that. And now that he can run the two-seamer over the inside against lefties and run it into righties, it's just another weapon for him. So continued knocking on wood for continued good health. But so far, he looks like a little bit of a turbocharged version of the guy who was 4th in the Cy Young last year.
Which would be, you know, very, very good for this Orioles team, not great for the rest of the American League East. Look, this Orioles team is, everyone in Toronto knows how good they are at this point. 2022 was kind of they're on their way up. This is looking a little scary. When will they get there? And then last year was like, no, there's no on the way up. We're here. We're going to win 100 games. They're on pace to win over 100 again. This looks like it's going to be a very competitive American League East. Once again, the Yankees are kind of right there with them. Have you seen, like, I know that maybe this team just, like, you know, sometimes with younger teams, with younger players, you don't know what you don't know. You don't know what to fear. So maybe this was never there. But when this team loses a game like yesterday in extra innings, hard luck loss, has there been like a growth in the confidence or the kind of swagger of like, okay, it's one game, we'll get it back. We're gonna roll through the rest of the series, even if it is a tough division opponent?
Yeah, I think it started 2 years ago when the Orioles had this 10-game winning streak in the middle of the season. I believe 3 or 4 of the 10 were walk-off wins. And you saw a team grow in confidence that they would just win every game, whether they trailed going into the ninth or not. This stat has been around for a while now, but the Orioles have not been swept in a regular season series in 2 years. And we have to put an asterisk on that because they were swept in the postseason by Texas last year, and you can't ignore that. But the regular season sweepless streak is I believe now the third longest in Major League history. It's 3rd or 4th. And they haven't lost 3 in a row this year. Tonight would be an opportunity for that to happen for the first time. But there is just a kind of quiet resilience to this team when they're never, ever phased. Last year, they were facing Tampa Bay in a four-game series at the end of the year, and they were two up. And Tampa played really well in the first two games and won the first two games and tied up the division with a couple of weeks to go. And then the next day was a Saturday game against Tyler Glasnow, who's pretty much owned the Orioles. And I just remember the casualness, the smiles, the calmness of batting practice that day. It just seemed like it was any other day. There was no tension whatsoever. It's hard to know where that comes from as a group. I think these are a lot of young players that won together in the minor leagues and are just kind of used to winning together, and won in college and won in high school. And you're right. In a sense, they almost don't know any better. And they went out that night and they knocked Tyler Glasnow out after a few innings. So I'm just so impressed by how this team can shake off a bad result. Anytime I think, is this going to be the one? Is this going to be the time the losing streak comes? It's not. And that's almost impossible to do in baseball these days. How much talent there is in the league, how much good pitching. But it's a very quiet, youthful resiliency and confidence.
And look, you mentioned that winning together in the minors and things like that. I would imagine that AAA Norfolk Tides team is headed for a championship as well, given that they have Kerstad and Jackson Holliday and Kobe Mayo and all those guys down there just waiting for an opportunity at the major league level. Kevin, before I let you go here, it is summertime. I know you are one of the very busiest people in baseball, but you're also a big music guy. Do you have any summer concerts ahead that you're really looking forward to?
I don't have anything that I have bought tickets for yet because I'm busy, and also because I have a 6.5-month-old who's crawling around the floor right now. There are a couple of shows I'd like to go to, depending on some Orioles off days, depending on my parenting schedule. I have not locked in anything yet, but there are some dates I'm eyeing. There are some off days that I'm eyeing. You know, Joan Jett is a huge Orioles fan.
I have heard that.
And she came up in the booth with us last year. And she's going to be in Maryland later this year. We have an off day, so you never know. Might try to make that happen. But nothing is locked down yet.
Well, I hope you...
I'm wondering when I can get away with putting headphones on the baby and, you know, taking her to a concert.
Yeah, I mean, that'd be
sure
cool.
What the appropriate age is for that.
Yeah, that'd be cool.
Three games, and the Orioles are 3-0 when she attends, so maybe she's just a good luck charm.
Maybe, yeah. You get her a little Blackhearts T-shirt and throw the headphones on. My first concert badge, like you can get at the baseball games. Hope that works out for you, man. Thanks so much for taking the time out this morning, and best of luck with the rest of the season, Kevin.
Hey, wait a minute. Before we go, you got to give me a new album recommendation, because again, my music intake has been a little bit different these days. So give me something good you've been listening to.
Okay, I have been listening to a lot of Waxahachie. Do you know Waxahachie?
I do know Waxahachie.
Okay. She was here at Massey Hall a couple weeks back, and I went. It was a tremendous show, and now it's one of those. Sometimes you see the show, and like you're like, okay, I listened to the album and then saw the show, conclusion of chapter. It's been the opposite for me. It's been in constant rotation. So if you haven't got to check that album out yet, that would be, that's probably my favorite one of this year so far.
Okay, great. Done.
All right.
We'll listen to you later.
All right. Kevin Brown, Orioles and ESPN play-by-play broadcaster, all around good guy and excellent Tom DeLong imitator. Okay. So it is Jays Orioles again tonight. It's another 6:35 start. So make sure you're tuned in early. Blair and Barker will have you 2 to 4. Jamie and Joe will have Blue Jay Central for you. Blue Jay Central for you at 6. Dan, Buck, and Hazel on the call. Ben and Chris on the radio side. Shy on the ground at sportsnet.ca. Thank you to Kevin Brown for coming on, to Keegan Matheson as well, and his terrific lighting in that Baltimore hotel room. Thanks to Amit Mann, Lance Kennedy, and Jennifer Rolnick behind the glass. We will be back tomorrow, extended hours tomorrow. The game's at 12:35 tomorrow, so we'll be with you from 11 until first pitch. So fingers crossed for no rain delay there. It's Bassett and Bradish tonight. Have a good day, everyone.